Some reporters, mostly TV reporters, put words into the mouths of young soldiers. Statements by officials were often misinterpreted, if at all possible. Many young reporters came over green, uninformed, and frequently biased against the mission our country had assigned us.
General William C. Westmoreland on press coverage of the war in Vietnam. Westmoreland, once commander of U.S. forces in Vietnam, is now retired and living in South Carolina. He spoke last week at the annual conference of Accuracy in Media, a group which monitors, usually critically, the performance of news organizations. Today on Closer Look, we'll listen to General Westmoreland assess the coverage of the war, and we'll hear from some of the reporters. Among other things, Vietnam was the first war in which American reporters were freed from the constraints of censorship. The war grew so quickly, the American journalists had a free hand in the early days, and having enjoyed that, would have fought the imposition of censors. But according to General Westmoreland, the reporters took their newfound liberty and ran amok.
Saigon, during the early years of the war, was one of the world's least desirable assignments for newsmen. A faraway, alien place, it had little attraction for American readers. So that nothing short of the sensational was likely to gain space in the newsman's home paper. Finding fault was one way to achieve the sensational, and finding fault with an Oriental regime with little background or respect for Western-style democracy was an easy thing to do.
Westmoreland viewed the coverage of the war with alarm. The Pulitzer Prize for 1964 was shared by two war correspondents, Malcolm Brown of the Associated Press and David Halberstam of the New York Times. Both were reporting that the war was going badly. And to Westmoreland, a Pulitzer for that reporting seemed an incentive for others.
To many of their successors, the young iconoclasts were folk heroes whose record demonstrated that the more critical and the more negative, the greater the possibility of recognition and rewards. And that was the pattern that was followed.
Vietnam was not only the first American war without censorship, it was the first real television war. The cameras seemed to be everywhere. But again, Westmoreland believes they seldom revealed the truth.
Television's unique requirements contributed to a distorted view of the situation. The news had to be compressed and visually dramatic. Thus, the war that Americans saw was almost exclusively violent, miserable, or controversial. Guns firing, men falling, helicopters crashing.
The helicopter was the greatest thing that ever happened to network television. It was great. It swirled, a lot of dust came up, it made noise, people jumped out of it. It was a very dramatic thing, and we loved it. Helicopter was the important element of our coverage of the war.
Former NBC television correspondent Robert Goralski. General Westmoreland might be surprised to learn how many reporters from the war shared his dissatisfaction with what they produced. Few were pleased with their efforts to convey what was happening. Goralski's experience set in motion a frustration that ultimately led to his resigning from NBC.
1 out of 10 times that we'd go out with the troops that we see in the action, if we did hit on that 1 out of 10 times, and we did get some action, they shot back at us, we had wounded, that was certain to get on the air. No matter what it meant, it would get on the air.
That was certainly part of it, an appetite on the part of editors and producers and readers and viewers for the spectacular. But according to Henry Bradshaw of the Washington Star, there were efforts to tell the real story of Vietnam.
Americans tend to focus only on the headlines, which are dealing with the most immediate crises, the most eye-catching or most dramatic, most critical developments. Certainly the American press, and I include magazines, offered a number of articles in depth during the period, particularly in the first period of the American involvement, 1965, 66, 67, a number of articles which would have explained Vietnam to people who were interested. But I doubt if most Americans really paid much attention to this kind of thing. I don't think they got very far beyond the headlines.
Perhaps part of the difficulty for reporters lay in their confusion. The military briefing officers were distrusted, but that left the journalists at a loss for some place to turn for guidance. There was no place to go to get the truth. And they existed in a near fantasy world that didn't make the truth any easier to come by. Stephen Bell covered the Cambodian incursion for ABC News.
We would get up in the morning. We would have our breakfast with white-coated waiters. Then we would put on our combat boots. And so we went to war every day in air-conditioned Mercedes limousines with stereo tape decks and an ice chest in the trunk with beer and soda. And you go out over some of the most beautiful, idyllic countryside on all of God's earth, and nice roads, blacktop roads, and you link up with some Cambodian troops, and maybe you get into a firefight, or maybe you get into a shelling where civilians are being killed and wounded, and you see all the agony, and you go through real fear yourself. Then you go back to your hotel, you take a shower, put on your swim trunk, go out for 2 or 3 hours, swim poolside, share war stories with your colleagues, go to a very nice restaurant that evening, some of the finest food in the world, come back to bed, sleep, the next morning you get up and do the same thing all over again. The only problem was that every few days somebody's car didn't come home. That's a tremendous schizophrenia. You have guilt feelings over what you're doing at night, and yet you couldn't stay with the combat every day if you didn't do what you could to relax.
Stephen Bell of ABC News. In the late 60s, the coverage of the war grew nearly as controversial as the war itself. Presidents complained the media were biased against them. Tom Lipman covered the war for the Washington Post.
Our role was not to expose anything for its own sake. Our role was not to bring down the American involvement in the war or to support it. That's not what we were there for. And if you think that the press did not do a job of telling people the truth of the war and revealing America's mistakes over there, then you can ask yourself, how is it that the American people know what they know today about the war?
General Westmoreland would have little difficulty answering that defense. He believes that most of what Americans know about the war is wrong, misreported, and never corrected by the press and the broadcasters. He finds greatest fault with the coverage that came out of late January and early February of 1968.
The turning point of the war in Vietnam was the Tet Offensive in early 1968. After short-lived success, it was a major military defeat of the communists. But it was also a political setback for the communists in Hanoi, since there was no public uprising against the Saigon regime, as predicted by Hanoi's propaganda. Sadly, here at home, it was portrayed as a victory for the communists. This false perception is directly attributable to inaccurate reporting by the media.
A former Vietnam War correspondent for the New York Times and the Washington Post, Peter Braestrup, has recently written a two-volume work called The Big Story. It's a study of press coverage of the Tet Offensive. According to Braestrup, the North Vietnamese did, in fact, suffer a terrible military loss, and the American news media failed to report that. And there's another recent Vietnam book out, The Memoirs of General Vo Nguyen Giap, the chief military strategist of North Vietnam. General Giap terms the Tet Offensive a massive military setback for the North. Tomorrow on Closer Look, a report from UPI's Southeast Asian correspondent Al Dawson on life in Vietnam today. I'm Alex Chadwick in Washington. Funds for this program are provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR, National Public Radio.